Hello and welcome back to the Inside HMCTS podcast with me, Aaron Wilson. We've got a bumper episode for you today focusing on our reform programme, which has been an ambitious programme that has been running since 2016 to modernise the justice system to make it more straightforward, accessible and efficient for everyone who needs it. We're now at the formal end of the programme, and to talk a little bit more about the work that's gone on and what happens next, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by two very special guests, our CEO Nick Goodwin and our Operations Director Daniel Flurry. Firstly, welcome to you both and thank you for giving up your time in your diaries to come on and talk to us. We've spent a long time talking about reform here at HMCTS, and I think it's something that many of us who work here deal with on a daily basis. But for those who aren't so familiar with the programme, what is reform and what was the aims of the programme? And I'm going to come to you first, Nick, with this question.
And it's very much about trying to improve access to justice for everyone that we serve in this country. And we thought we could improve that by making the courts much simpler to use and faster to use. And the main route to doing that was to really invest in digitalization of our services, technology, and thereby allow people to interact with the court and put their case across in a much, much more simple way, and in a way which isn't just about digitalization, but means that the processes in the court are simpler to understand as well. So we wanted to bring simplification with digitalization together, and we hoped, and I think it has proved already to be the case, that that makes justice much more accessible for people, much easier to understand.
Lovely. And Daniel, I think this is your debut on the podcast, because I know Nick appeared on our Westminster Knives Down podcast. But for you, obviously, you've had a couple of different roles sort of throughout reform. What has reform meant to you, and what was the reform programme aiming to solve?
Well, can I say I'm delighted to be making my debut on the HMCTS podcast. It's sometimes forgotten how unmodernised HMCTS was prior to 2016. And let me just sort of illustrate that a bit. So firstly, you know, video hearings, having a sort of conventional hearing other than a prison to court video link was largely unthinkable. You know, we did odd telephone hearings, but there was so little video hearing capacity across the system, and especially on the civil, family and tribunals, that, you know, it just wasn't thought possible, whereas it's very much part and parcel of the court system nowadays. But in terms of sort of some of the process, you know, I think back to, let's take the Social Security and Child Support Tribunal, what we call SSCS. Now, prior to reform, you'd fill out a paper form, that form would be sent to us, it would then be sent over to the DWP, the Department of Work and Pensions, the DWP. This is all by second class post, I should add. They would then send a huge paper bundle back to us, again by second class post. And what we would do, we would photocopy that bundle three times to put that in front of the panel, in front of the tribunal. Now, you can imagine how much post and how much paper is involved in all of that, and how much back and forth is in all of that. And fast forward to today, you submit your appeal online, you can track your appeal online. The bundle is sent to the DWP electronically, it's sent back electronically, it appears on the tribunal member's laptop, and off we go, we have the hearing. Now, you might think, okay, great, well, you know, it's nice to have everything online, but let me just try and illustrate Nick's access to justice point. Because we have that far slicker system, that far easier system, you know, it used to take approximately a week to get things back through the post, to log it into a system, to file it in the right place, to move it here, there and everywhere. We have these huge photocopying factories. You know, all of this online process removes days and days from the process. You're no longer waiting for the post, appears instantaneously. And that is what we mean by access to justice. That's what we mean by improving a system. That's what we mean by modernization. And it's sometimes, given how part and parcel things are now, it's sometimes easy to forget how far we have come over the last 8 years. You know, I could cite lots of other jurisdictions, but we've come a long, long way.
One of the things, when I think about that, Don, as well, what I think about is, the processes that used to take weeks now take literally seconds. There's another really interesting stat we had the other day when we were rolling out one of our civil services, whereby I think an entire case went from start to finish in 26 minutes. Now, I don't expect that to be the norm in the future, but that does show that if you cut out the kind of shoe leather costs of back and forth and boil things down to the issue at stake, you can potentially get a decision made that quickly, which I think has to be the benefit of everyone, particularly if you think about small businesses who want to get on and do their job.
And I think one really important part of it is, you know, we talk a lot about the sort of contact with HMCTS and customer service and so on. You know, what a lot of reform has been able to do is to allow legal professionals, court users, to interact directly with our systems for the first time. So, you know, an immigration solicitor will sort of log on to my HMCTS, see the progress of the appeal, and be able to advise their sort of client accordingly. You know, the police, the Crown Prosecution Service, can access the common platform system, see the material, access the material, prepare for the hearing, really. And in doing so, that has allowed them to improve the service they provide to their users, to their clients, and so on. And again, this is what we mean by access to justice. We see the central role the court has in the system. And through the use of better, more accessible, flexible systems, we're able to enhance access to justice, as I say.
On sort of SJP and sort of the common platform and those sorts of systems, how, I mean, I think obviously a lot of different areas of justice have to align for justice to be delivered, but how has that helped with sort of relationships across justice?
It's massively helped, really. In some ways, it's sort of brought us all together. You know, it's always been said the sort of the criminal justice system can only move as fast as its sort of slowest part. And having a sort of single platform sitting at the heart of it all through the court system, you know, it does bring parties together to develop a sort of shared objective, shared understanding, and to sort of provide a bit of structure around working in things like working against sort of things like criminal procedure rules. So, you know, you can see on the common platform when a certain task hasn't been done, when a sort of file hasn't been uploaded, or the police or the Crown Prosecution Service, the court haven't done their bit. And in some ways, the provision of a sort of joint system across us all, you know, it provides that discipline, provides that sort of structure around our process, and that will ultimately help, I think, court outcomes, really. It's been a difficult journey getting the common platform in place. You know, it's been difficult with our partners sometime, but again, a hallmark of what we've done in HMCTS reform is really strive to understand the users, and that includes, you know, such critical partners as the police and the CPS. And I'd like to think that we have worked very closely together through the 8 years we've been undertaking reform, and you know, have overcome challenges together to provide a system that is, you know, not the finished article, but is in pretty good shape.
And you've actually brought me quite nicely onto my next question. I think obviously 8 years is a long time to go through a program, and obviously things have changed massively in that time. But if you sort of reflect on the program now, what have been your biggest learnings from it? And is there anything you would have done differently if you were to do it again?
Well, I'll have a go at that. I mean, you take the broad sweep of the last 8 years or so. There's been so many lessons and so many things that we've learned along the way. I think the bits I'd pick out, back in 2016 when we kicked this off, there was a real value in having a kind of mission, in saying how we wanted to change the system. And, you know, we'll be judged as to whether we've achieved that or not. And I think we're certainly heading in that direction. But getting the key players, getting the judiciary, getting the government all in the same room and saying we want, you know, swifter, more accessible justice was really powerful. It sounds simple. And, of course, all those players have always believed that. But getting it signed up in those simple terms was really, really important. There's another thing we've learned along the way, which is to actually change the justice system is a real challenge. It's got so many players, and along the way you have to do things that get you some momentum and get you some wins and get you doing things differently. And there are phases in the reform program. We had COVID in the middle of it, where establishing that momentum was difficult, but we did manage to get that going, and I think that's a really commendable thing. I think from that we then learn that it's great to have momentum, but you also have to listen. You have to understand what you're doing along the way. And we spent a lot of time learning that lesson, making sure that we really didn't just sort of seek feedback for people, but we understood what their feedback meant. And then we took the time to get things right and change things as we went along. And that was a really, really important lesson for this program. The other one, really obvious, this was a modernization, digitalization program. And you'll have heard this before, but digitalization, transformation of the sort is not about computers. I mean, you need to get that right, but it's about people, just as about people. And I think we've always known that as we've gone along, but we've learned really hard lessons as well to make sure that we always think about how people are interacting with systems, not the systems themselves necessarily. The two final things for me, I think as we've gone on, we've got better. We try to learn these lessons. I think having humility and really understanding lessons has been something I've been really proud of my team in terms of how they've internalized that. And I think we're now at a phase where we've got a kind of good rhythm of delivery, a good way of doing things that means all these aspects are integral to it. And then the final thing is the reform program was always set up with the understanding that we have to have users' needs at the heart. It's about access to justice. It's about understanding what works for the user. And I think one of the things I'm really kind of proud about is actually we hardly talk about that at all now. And that's not because it's become less important. It's more because that has become part of the DNA about how we try and do change in HMCTS. So I think that's a good thing. But all these lessons are kind of precious lessons. And we've got to make sure that we don't lose sight of them is a kind of really big thing for me as we kind of reach this end phase. And what I'm really pleased about is we haven't got as far as what we've liked, but as we've gone through this, what we've also learned is if you set out a vision 8 years ago and you look at where you are now, you see where you fell short, but you also see in absolute spades where you can go further, where you've built a foundation that really opens up new possibilities. So, I hope we can keep going in this direction.
Perfect. And how about you, Daniel? Is there anything that you would do differently in your involvement with reform?
I think I'll just begin by echoing my comments at the start about, you know, turn back the clock to 2014, 2015. We were starting from a very low base. And this is one of the reasons why reform has been so ambitious and so hard. You know, we had very limited call center capability. We had very limited video capability. Here we go. Here's another anecdote for you. 7 out of 10 immigration appeals were received via fax. A fax machine. It illustrates the distance we've had to come in reform. And when you combine that, as Nick says, with a pandemic, with growing caseloads in the vast majority of jurisdictions, with an ever-changing and increasingly complex criminal justice system, you know, it has been difficult. It has been hard. And as Nick says, you know, the people are the critical factor in it. There's no such thing as a sort of technology transformation. It is always a business transformation. And with that business, it's people, it's culture, it's everything, really. What would I have done differently? I think at the beginning, we tried to do everything at once. We went at it head first. We had great drive, great energy, great ambition. And we tried to change lots and lots of things all at once. Whereas, as Nick says, we got far, far better at doing it at the end. You know, I think perhaps at the beginning we should have staggered ourselves a little bit and built up to that crescendo rather than sort of getting to that crescendo right from the outset.
Well, I thought it's sort of Daniel's and I just sounds like a bit of a rock concert. I mean, it is. It's almost as if we kind of came out onto the stage, you know, absolutely blasting. And we should. I mean, you do need that vision. You need that momentum. You need something that kind of sets out what the band is. But you save some great hits for the end and you put them all the way through. And I think, some of that sort of musical cadence, I think, is sort of relevant to doing things like this. You know, you need to kind of set out your store, build the mood, and then hopefully finish on a stadium rock anthem. But there you go.
I just want to sort of ask you both, really, what, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things to pick out from here, but if you had to pick a personal highlight from the the reform journey, if you like, what would that be, and what are you most proud of from across the 8 years we've been doing this? I'll come to you, Daniel, first.
I think the changes to the asylum and immigration system were, for me, really profound, because not only did we introduce a new system, a new way of working, you know, move away from the dreaded fax machines, as I mentioned, but, you know, completely change the way in which our appeals are submitted, dealt with, considered, put before a judge and concluded. You know, not only did we just add a digital front end to it, as it's called, but introduce concepts like the appeal skeleton arguments, introduce the role of the tribunal legal officer, expand the role of the tribunal legal officer. And the reason why that was so exciting is because the beginning of reform, we were very candid with our staff in saying that, you know, this will mean there are fewer people working in HMCTS in future. But the creation of the legal officer role meant we had higher skilled, better paid roles to offer our people. And, you know, we're now at the stage where we have almost 200 legal officers across HMCTS. And, you know, it's been great to develop and offer this role to our people and to sort of make good our promise of, you know, this is what a digital future could look like. It doesn't always mean job cuts, greater pressure. It means higher paid, higher skilled roles, working in a really interesting environment right alongside the judiciary. So I think that is one of the sort of high points from a sort of staffing perspective, well, from a whole system perspective, from the reform programme.
How about you, Nick?
I think across our reform services, we've got a series of what we call access justice assessments, whereby we can now look at the sort of service people are experiencing and work out how to improve access justice for those people and make sure elderly people or people who don't have English as their first language are not disadvantaged. And the kind of little vignettes, little stories you get about how individual people have benefited from that, I think have been really, really powerful. And then the final thing that kind of sticks in my mind is when I go around the courts and talk to our staff, firstly, we haven't lost the fact that behind every kind of case, there's a person. So we retain something that's always been important to our DNA, and there's an organisation, even though it's been digitalised, and it's not, it's, you know, the face behind the case. It's no longer the person behind the paper, it's the face behind the case. We've still got that. It's really important. But with that, increasingly, as I go around and talk to people, I'll say, oh, we just switched on a new service, new point of functionality. How are you finding that? And a few years ago, it would have been, oh, my God, it's terrible. I'm so confused. And now we've got a workforce who largely say to me, oh, God, it's made my life a lot better. And I think that's showed, that's been something really important for us as an organisation. And I think for our professional users, it means that we've gone a little bit from an organisation that liked a bit of Dickensian stuff and didn't much like change to adjust the system now that it's embracing the future. And that's really healthy for kind of UK PLC, UK legal services, as well as actually the courts and tribunals. And yeah, again, it's nice to hear that from a very personal perspective from people I talk to.
Just to come back onto sort of the main programme, obviously nearing an end or an official end as it is. I think probably some people would be wondering is how do you measure success of the reform program, of what we've delivered and what is to come, I suppose. How do we measure success of the reform program? Well, I'll come to you first, Daniel, actually here.
Well, one of the key metrics we use is the proportion of cases that are submitted digitally, electronically. And, you know, wherever I look, there are, well, there's still work to be done here, certain jurisdictions. But there are a large number of jurisdictions where everything is submitted electronically now, especially in the criminal jurisdiction. You know, those where there is a bit more of a choice, you know, we're in well above sort of 70-80%. So again, you turn the clock back 8 years where you are predominantly in a sort of paper and post system to something where 80%, 90% of appeals claims are submitted online is a great achievement. We also look at, you know, being able to deal with people in a sort of digital way allows them to give, you know, more considered instantaneous feedback. And we look at things like satisfaction rates, user satisfaction rates, And not only do we look at user satisfaction rates, we look at them on the basis of protected characteristics on, in terms of race, sex, ethnicity. It gives them far greater insight into what people are thinking and feeling about our services in a way that just didn't exist before. You know, again, let's turn the clock back 10 years. We'd have a sort of dusty suggestions banker's box with a hole in the top sitting in the corner, and people would stick a bit of paper in there, whereas now it's far more comprehensive, far more detailed, far more insightful. So, you know, yes, there were savings to be made. Yes, there was modernization to be undertaken. But, you know, looking at digital uptake, whether it's claims or appeals submitted or the number of video hearings alongside the user satisfaction, I think are the real hallmarks of what reform is all about.
So for me, what it will come back down to is, have we fulfilled the original mission statement? Have we improved access to justice? And that is measured by, you know, how easily people can interact with the justice system. How will they understand it? Do they get a speedy and timely outcome? And I think actually the data there, we will keep looking at it for forever, really. And we'll do a proper evaluation. We are already doing some evaluations. We'll do a complete evaluation in the forthcoming years. But that'll be the heart of it. Can we stand up and say access to justice has been improved? I'm extremely confident the answer will be yes.
Sticking with you here, Nick, obviously there's been a huge amount of people involved in the reform programme, from sort of staff across HMCTS to justice partners, and obviously external stakeholders as well. What would you say to them, just sort of coming towards the end of reform?
I'd say two things. I'd say firstly, thank you, because it has been quite hard. So thank you. Well, then I'd say in the second clause of thank you, you're a better team now than you were when you started to. So we started this. And I think that is because everyone has played their role and they have interacted with each other and they've learned a lot from each other. So yeah, thank you. But thank you as a team, whether you're in my team, whether you're a legal professional, whether you're a judge, whether you're a user. Thank you for working well together.
And what about you, Daniel? Would you add anything to that?
Possibly, yeah. I think certainly say thank you. Reform in terms of its scale was, you know, genuinely once in a generation reform. You know, as I said, we were starting from such a low base. The scale of the change, the money involved was so significant. But I think I'd say that whilst reform is coming to an end, this doesn't mean that modernization stops here. You know, there is so much more to go in terms of continuing to refine and enhance the system, to start incorporating things like the use of artificial intelligence and other technological advances. There's still plenty of work to do out there to really improve, enhance and modernize our systems. Whilst, as I say, the once in a lifetime reform has come to an end, change will continue.
I think you must have a crystal ball there, because that actually brings me really nicely onto my next question, sort of around what does come next. Because obviously, from what I've understood, is that just because the reform program is sort of coming to a formal end, it doesn't mean that the work to change and improve stops. So what is next for HMCTS?
Well, I mean, there's a lot, as you say. Reform is going to end as a sort of formal programme, but there's some things that we're already committed to seeing through outside of the programme. So there's some things we won't finish off by April, but we need to see them through. So that will continue, definitely. And then I will think particularly big deal for the civil cases where we want to get as much paper out as possible. Beyond that, and also for some of the tribunals, beyond that, what we now have, really, it's quite a long list of opportunity that we've opened up. And our challenge now is less about sort of constructing the next great big program. It's about working out which improvements we can now see most benefit from people and then being able to prioritize those. And that's really the business we're going to be in. So I'm not going to pick one jurisdiction or one great change. We now have so many tools at our disposal, and Danny mentioned AI, for example. But the way we should be doing it is saying what will make the biggest difference in terms of improving access to justice and going at that in a measured way. And as I say, there's a very, very long list, and that's actually a healthy place to be, in my view.
And obviously, as I say, it's been a bit of a journey for reform over the last 8 years. But if we are coming to the end, or the formal close of it as it is, and this is sort of the closing concert, what song would represent the end of reform, Nick?
Oh, my Lord. I don't know. Daniel's got a better musical taste than me. I'll let him go first. God. It's not God. Dolly Parton, Nigel Five. Let's put it that
I'm
way.
I'm hoping it's not going to be We Will Rock You either. But
what have you got, Dan?
I was thinking more of the Europe, it's the final countdown sort of thing. You know, we started off playing lots of new material, but we did all the number ones at the end of it, really. And, you know, it was good to leave it that way.
Yeah, some ABBA medley, maybe.
A medley, yeah.
Well, I'm very sad to say that, unfortunately, we're out of time. And much like the Reform programme, we are at the end of this podcast. Thank you again, Nick and Daniel, both for joining me. And to all of you listening to this as well, thank you for tuning in. You may have already seen that we've been covering off plenty of work from across our programme on our digital channels over the last week or so, and there's plenty more to come as we look at the transformation of the justice system in recent years. More information is available on our blog pages and our GovUK website. Just search Inside HMCTS for the blog and HMCTS for our GovUK homepage. We'll be back again soon with another episode, but in the meantime, from everyone here, take care. Thank you.